dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. To CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RANs, zip, sips.
Hey there, welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 118 for October 18th, 2005. I'm Strom Carlson.
I'm Black Ratchet.
And I'm Dr. Zigman.
And this week, we've got Dr. Zigman in from, I don't even remember where you're from.
All you're around.
Loser. Florida.
Florida, okay.
BR561.
Sweet.
Right? I think it's BR561.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Wow, I surprised myself on that one.
The joy of the internet, where borders are so non-existent, you don't even remember where anyone's from anymore.
That's gone. It's eerie when you start, like, you're sitting in the middle of work, and I'm on the IRC channel, and you see people, oh, okay, I'm going to bed. And it's just like, where are you? What's wrong with you? And it's like people from, like, Europe and Britain, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And, of course, then there's people who IM me on the West Coast. Not you, but other people. When I'm in bed, it's 3 a.m., and hear my computer start going, ding, ding, ding. I'm like,
Where are you? Hello? OMG, wake up. Hi, are you there? Hello?
They, like, start posting me their life stories, and I'm just like, I don't care. I was actually talking about this on the IRC channel today. I need something for, like, Windows that will automatically mute my speakers between, like, midnight and 4.
Well, there is the volume control in the little corner of the window. I'm sure you could just
turn
that down when you go to
bed. Yeah, but I want to do something automatic. Well, I mean, normally I do, but I just sometimes I forget because I'm tired and I want to go to bed. But people won't let me because they're IMing me.
You know, I do something really nice. I just turn my IM sounds off completely forever.
Agreed.
And that solves the problem.
Agreed.
Well, I just have the initial. You just got a message sound. I don't have the one for every time, but normally it for some reason, whenever I hear one, I'm just like, oh my god, if I don't turn it off, like 15 more will come from 15 different people, and I'll constantly hear that all night. So, enough gas bagging. We have some mega email this week. We got gobs of email. I don't think we've got this much email ever.
Yeah,
not even our first episode.
Back, baby.
Well, you were always here. We just, no one ever wanted to talk to us.
Yeah, well, I think people are starting to warm up to our kind, friendly demeanor.
No, we probably just picked up a good topic, I guess.
Perhaps, yeah.
All right, do you want to fade in the email theme here?
Yeah, let's insert the email theme. Insert host / co-host here. Glad to hear a show on BSD, good for a change of pace. I use both Linux and FreeBSD at home. I run BSD on my server and Linux on my desktop. I've been using Linux for a few years now and can get around pretty well. BSD was more to my taste. I'm a Cisco guy, yeah, whatever. And one thing I liked about BSD is that it doesn't do anything until you tell it to. I like this, but due to my lack of Unix knowledge, I didn't even know how to set my IP correctly using ifconfig because I was spoiled with Linux's tools. Then I had to figure out how to set my default root. Anyways, I think BSD is a great OS and their port system is just fantastic. Much easier for me than even apt. Well, keep up the good work. Frostbite.
Wow. I this is the first time I've ever heard that someone says that something is better than apt, because I love apt.
I love
I've seen
apt
the light.
Too.
There are Linux distributions out there, just so you know, that they won't hold your hand. They'll make you do everything you want. Slackware was actually pretty good at this, but they've started to, I don't know, drift to the dark side, as it were.
I think we should start a new Linux distro, Balls to the Wall Linux.
Advanced Linux for hackers. Hacksaws.
Hacksaw Linux.
Script Kitty Linux. And
yeah,
we'll do it. We'll do it, you know, L1NU, greater than, less than.
Yeah, and make it a live CD.
Yeah. what I always feel is, you know, Linux is geared toward mom and dad now, and they want to try to make it so that everyone can install it. Ubuntu is a great, example of this.
Yeah, except when you read the documentation, it's like having someone in Birkenstocks talk to you, but anyway.
I always get that feeling about the entire operating system, but it all seems to work right out of the box.
Same thing with something like Red Hat as well, where it's a commercial substitute for Windows more than it is a Unix-based operating system.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the whole Red Hat thing is that they're starting to they tried to stop gearing it toward the user base, and they're trying to make a splash in the enterprise, and they're doing relatively well with that.
When I worked at a large monopolistic kind of ticketing distribution company.
I hear they're the master of ticketing.
Yes, they are, in fact, masters of ticketing. But they, in fact, used a distribution which was, you know, very much, I think it was a Red Hat-derived internal distribution for the company. But
so based on the Fedora core?
No, not Fedora core. It was based on, like, one of the commercial Red Hat versions.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes, I actually heard about someone running Red Hat Enterprise Linux on their desktop, and they weren't in like an enterprise environment, which was completely foreign to me, and I have no clue if they actually support this correctly. I always assumed that when I always heard about Red Hat Enterprise Linux, it was for servers, not desktops. But I could be wrong. I've never used it, so I could be just blowing smoke out of my ass.
Yeah. Also, this wasn't really a cross-company thing. There were numerous other distributions that were running around the company.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a nightmare for your support department.
No, each team kind of administers their own stuff.
Something that makes sense, unlike my department.
Yes.
So, anyway, Linux is geared more toward average users and getting everyone installed on it, and you can give your parents the CD and say, just pop this in, it'll install it all automatically.
It really depends on the distro, because if you're going to walk out of the gate with something like Slackware, you're going to have to do some work to configure it. You know, it might have those fancy tools, but when it gets down to the meat and the potatoes, you're going to be sitting with your VI editing config files. It really, however much work you want to do, however much control you want to have, I think that's a big advantage of Linux, of having so many distros, is, hey, you can decide, hey, I want to understand it from this level.
Yeah, and the Debian install also, I think there's several modes of operation where in one instance it'll pretty much just show you all happy faces and install itself without any interaction, and then you can also go for the really complex ask you everything
package
install.
By package.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or package rather, not packet.
Yeah.
Do the happy faces dance when you install it?
I don't recall, but I think it would be cute if they danced into the tribal thing. Maybe that would be more of an Ubuntu thing.
Yes. Yeah, by the way, Ubuntu finally released 5.10, which is Breezy Badger this week. So if you like Ubuntu, download it. I was impressed. I upgraded. They actually went to a completely graphic boot-up screen, which I'm not sure how I feel about yet, but we won't get into that. Anyway, my point is, while certain Linux distributions try to gear toward everybody, BSD tries to gear more toward people who know what the hell they're doing, as we previously stated. So they don't care, as it were. They don't try to make it easy. They assume you just know what the hell you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Frostbite, I can feel your pain about ifconfig and route. Actually, I had that problem with Solaris. It was not fun.
Yeah. I've tried to install Solaris, actually, and I've gotten nowhere, so I should download it again and give it another shot.
I installed Solaris x86 on a P200, and it was weird. It was very weird to see CDE booting up on a, or coming up on a PC. It was very, very strange.
That just sounds like an exercise in masochism.
I used to use Solaris a lot when I was in college. It was the College of Computer Science used to have that, and that was their default install. You would have Solaris. And
yeah.
I was familiar with the CDE. Yeah. And on a completely unrelated note, Strom, is it router or router?
I think it's a router.
Router, but it's a root command.
Yes.
Hmm.
Rate and routing operator.
What about you, Zygmunt? Router or router?
I'm going to have to go with router on that.
Okay. Because yeah. I heard it
only
pronounced both ways, and
well,
I'm just
only
curious.
Because, from what I can, there are several competing plumbing companies in the Los Angeles area. There's Roto-Rooter and Rescue-Rooter, and both of those spell router, R-O-O-T-E-R. So to avoid ambiguity, I don't think anyone would pronounce the latter router, so I'm going to pronounce R-O-U-T-E-R as router.
Yeah, I actually do router, but I also call the command route. Because
mm-hmm.
what does it do? It routes packets. But of course, if you're going out on a paper route, you go on a paper route, not a paper route.
And no one would ever talk about Route 66.
Route.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways, paper route and paper route.
Yeah.
I think
it's just more of where you are and what pronunciation you like and what you brought up with, I guess.
Yeah. So let's hear the flood of email, route versus route.
Yes. Well, how do you pronounce it? Route or root and router or a router?
And in what context, yeah. Send your email to radio@binrev.com. Send now.
We have like a survey site or something.
Yeah, we should do that.
Huh.
BinRev survey of the week.
Our next email. I'm sorry, Zygmunt, what?
We can do all the polls we want on the forum.
Yeah, maybe I should do that tonight. I actually still, I promised something like 2 weeks ago that I still haven't gotten up yet, and I should actually do that, but I won't say what it is because I won't fire myself like that. Anyway,
I'll put up the route and root poll tonight then on the forum.
Sounds like a plan. Our next email is, hello, Stankdog and Wintermute.
Who are those people?
I don't know. I really don't know. And he says, http://www.pcbsd.org. Papa Charlie, Bravo, Sierra Delta. Have you seen this PCBSD project? It's based on FreeBSD and provides a robust graphical interface for the initial install and doesn't require much Unix knowledge for the post-install. One might compare it to SUSE or Mandrakes from the Linux world. Nevertheless, the major BSDs are a well-documented and highly supported operating system. Linux is well-documented, too, but I feel the dividing factors in the Linux community cause there to be more...
Diatribe,
yeah. Whew. And propaganda for that than good information, especially surrounding the various distributions and the kernel itself. I know of the forums you wanted to mention in the last episode. That is www.bsdforums.org. There are quite a few knowledgeable people there. And, wow, who? Stankdog and Wintermute. When's the last time that Stankdog and Wintermute hosted the show? Does anybody know?
I can look it up.
I think it was, like, right before we took it out, like 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, they did something together. But I think our friend here was just sort of pulling our chains or something and trying to get a rise out of us. I honestly can't tell if he's just silly or being sarcastic or just plain stupid. We won't get into that. I'm assuming it's silly or sarcastic because no one is stupid that writes email at binrev.com. You know,
the last one hosted by Stankdog and Wintermute was episode 98 from May 31st, 2005.
It was classic, though, so you can't blame him.
Yeah, it was humorous. It made me do a double take. I will give you that. BSD Forums was the site we were thinking of. I verified it with a couple other people and showed it to them and said, oh, yeah, that's it. They are cool. They seemed very friendly and helpful in my slight perusal, but I couldn't really tell much because I don't know BSD, so most of the questions were like, oh, okay. And now, Strom has volunteered to read the next email. It's epic.
It's epic, like 2.5 lines long, if you've got a 3,000-column display.
Take it away, Strom, and we'll sort of edit out all the breaths so you can make
okay.
It sound like one thing. There we go.
Hi. Listening to your show on the BSDs, I noticed that there were a few inaccuracies concerning the BSD family tree. I think that it was Stalin who said that the BSDs discussed were all derivatives of AT&T code. Not so. Quote, The NetBSD operating system is a full-featured open-source Unix-like operating system descended from the Berkeley Networking Release 2, NetSlash 2, 4.4 BSD Lite, and 4.4 BSD Lite 2, and that's tinyurl.com/bravo. What's R?
Romeo.
Bravo Romeo Victor 2. Norway? Is N?
November.
November, okay. I'm still learning the phonetic alphabet. BRV2N. tinyurl.com/BRV2N. Even more interesting would be the family tree project that Grokline bases its timeline project on, and that's grokline.net, G-R-O-K-L-I-N-E, which includes almost all Unix derivatives, even the newer Dragonfly BSD, and that's levenez.com/Unix, levenez.com/Unix. The freely available BSDs aren't direct descendants of the AT&T code because of the lawsuit between Berkeley and USL, among other reasons. If you're not familiar with this lawsuit at all, in a nutshell, USL sued the Regents of the University of California and Berkeley Software Design, Inc. over intellectual property. The case was settled out of court because the Regent proved that USL was using their code without proper attribution, as well as that no pertinent trade secrets inherent in their BSD implementation were revealed. This is admittedly a very liberal summary. You'll find more at tinyurl.com/9...
Delta November 5 Charlie,
yes. 9 Delta November 5 Charlie, where there are all sorts of links. Other than that, I have to concur with your guests on BSD's place on the desktop. If you're a bit technically savvy, I'm sure you can get all the most popular BSD variants installed and configured to most of your needs. Personally, I've used OpenBSD, FreeBSD, and NetBSD as desktops, and heard that something called Windows can also be used, provided that you don't install any supplemental software or connect it to the interweb. But it'll be a chore. My recent experiences with FreeBSD, from 5.x to 7.0 current, have been that their ports aren't always stable or easy to install. KDE or GNOME, for example, haven't ever built without problems, but be it incompatible patches or uncompilable code. With KDE, I've been successfully, in quotes, I've even successfully installed the meta port with the, quote, make install, unquote, and found that start KDE was missing, which leads me to believe that the port itself was a bit faulty. In fact, it would have been easier for me to download the source myself, patch, configure, compile and install it, then use the meta port. A couple of years ago at the systems trade show in Munich, I spoke with a BSD user group member about this. Munich is in Germany, by the way, he wants to point out. To which he replied with something along the lines of, GNOME is a known problem, but why not use something light and fast like Fluxbox, or sounds like a KDE problem? Years later, it's still happening, and I know I'm not the only one in the world that uses KDE or GNOME on BSD. I've yet to find a stable alternative that looks as nice as either of these desktop environments. E17 and XFCE4 are pretty close, though. And of course, the ports tree is not searchable except with other tools, not like Gentoo with emerge-s, or Debian's apt-cache search. So you might just have to know what they call the package, case-sensitive, of course. That said, I think that the core system of the BSDs are indeed clean, stable, fast, and well-documented. If you really want to knock yourself out, why not use one of them as a desktop system? Well, I guess that this was mostly incomplete commentary on the BSDs, but I hope that the links are helpful. Keep up the good work and watch out for Red Tide. Eamon.
Wow.
I have to say that's amazing. Also, that was really long, but a very 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 good summary. I was quite impressed.
Long, well written, and thorough. I heartily approve.
Yeah, Eamon, you get
that's
mad shouts. I'll have to remember to put you in my shouts tonight. Anyway, that Levenez link, I actually tinyurled that. It's tinyurl.com/23delta Yankee Gulf. Because I apparently forgot to do that. I usually try to tinyurl the URLs in this, but I kind of slipped by because I was kind of rushing through the show notes tonight.
Ratchet, when will you learn?
Yeah, I actually, real life is starting to rear its ugly head with work today, so it was really annoying.
Wow.
All right.
So rest
your mouth here. I'll take the next one.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, this email is dedicated to Merck. He kind of made a comment on how we don't get any international emails besides like two or three in the past X episodes. However,
and this one comes from our friends to the north in Montreal.
Yeah, Montreal. Hi, guys. I am from Montreal. Love the show, and I'm thinking about doing my own asterisk box after hearing you talk about it. I love your explanations of different telephone systems. I'm not into freaking, but I have an electronic background and find your explanations easy to follow and interesting. I just have one question. What would be a good cheap interface that I could use to interface my asterisk with my standard phone line? Now that you've said you've had problems remembering raid levels, me too. Here's a good site that reference all the raid levels somewhat clearly. Be sure to click on the diagram for raid 5, as it will animate the process in front of your eyes. !
This is bang, bang, bang is simpler, I think.
Yeah, but I like saying the exclamation mark. He also disclaims, I have no affiliation with this company, and it's tinyurl.com/3xraybravo5yankee. Also, you talk about a keylogger inside a Dell laptop. Here is a circuit you see on the page, but it is used inside a PS2 keyboard and not on the laptop keyboards. And that's tinyurl.com/9TangoAlpha9Romeo. And I gotta say, that's a really cool tutorial. I'm gonna keep it bookmarked, and I will also remember to bookmark it at work, because that's usually where this stuff comes up. However, I doubt it's gonna help me memorize any of those damn numbers, because I hate numbers. Numbers suck.
You're a phone freak. You have to like numbers.
I like numbers. I don't like memorizing stupid things. I'm the only phone freak that can't memorize phone numbers right off the top of my head. That's why I keep gratuitous notes that are on flash paper. So when I get raided, I can just burn them. Ha ha. Ha. So I like his link to the keylogger thing, and they show it. And they show it going inside of a PS2 keyboard. However, I was looking at the pictures they have, and one of the pictures they have looks a lot like the same picture the guy posted on his site.
A lot like it enough to be suspiciously similar?
Enough, it's very suspiciously similar.
Ooh.
I actually should have gone for some alliteration there. Super surprisingly suspiciously similar. There we go. That'll work.
Surprisingly suspiciously similar.
Okay, we can get really carried away.
Yes, we can.
So, either he's amazing, and he just got it lined up perfectly when he took his, because he says that I took all these pictures taking apart my laptop, and I never saw otherwise that I stole this from the site. So he must have, when he took the picture, he must have just used the same background, lined it up exactly the same, got the same rotation, the same angle, the same lighting, and he's just that good. Or he just, you know, took it from the site and he never told us, and he's lying about this entire thing. You be the judge. I'm not making any comments on that.
I like the Occam's razor principle. All things being equal, the simplest explanation tends to be the correct one.
Again, this is just another knock toward that site. By the way, I'm curious if anyone signed up for their straight, non-Jew, whatever it was, the web hosting that we wholeheartedly endorsed last episode.
I should sign up for it, you know?
You should just do it. Yes, you should.
Yeah.
Just see what they make you do.
Yeah, being gay, raised Jewish, you know, I should sign up and see what happens.
And see what they say. And hopefully you'll get it. You'll be able to. You should email them saying, "I lied. I'm not Jew. I was raised Jewish and I'm homosexual. Ha ha.
I suck cock. Ha ha ha."
I don't know if you need to get into that much detail.
Actually, no. It probably blew their minds. So you should.
No pun intended.
So, okay, that sort of wraps it up for email. I think that's one of our longest email segments yet.
Yeah.
Could be. Well, that's one of them, sure. I mean, still, Eamon, you rock. Thanks for that email. You sort of, I'll have to get you on the show if we ever do a BSD show again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, email us your contact information or something.
Well, we have his contact information.
Well, yeah, we'll email address. More detailed voice contact info or whatever.
Yeah. So, personal hacking stories. Sigmund, what have you been up to? Have you been slaving away on the Hack TV editing console?
I have been going crazy on Hack TV. Let me give everybody the update what's going on now. We're almost ready to get going with it. We just need a couple of little intro segments, and we're just working. The thing that's really taken a long time with this is because it was submissions from other people, things have to be converted so that it all looks uniform. And that's taken a little bit longer than I had originally hoped, and it's no fault on anybody who submitted, because we really appreciate everybody who submits. It's just, you know, you just got to make it all look like it came together. There's a million different codexes, a million different ways of doing things. I didn't have the opportunity to take all the footage, so you got to apply all those special fancy filters we were talking about last time. Things just have to render. It's going to get out there as soon as absolutely possible. And I'm really looking forward to having it look nice. The intro is a new intro. That's the little tidbit that we're going to give everybody. It's a brand new intro. It features a couple of people. We're not going to mention any names. But I think it's coming together nicely. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. As soon as it's ready, guys, we're just trying to push it out at this point. And it's just at the point where everything's got to be put together. And, you know, it's got to get those final okays from everyone along the road. Because, of course, I did make that deal. Anybody who submitted, you are going to approve your clip before it's actually used. So a couple of things like that we're just waiting on. And it really should be very soon. I really look forward to bringing it out soon, guys.
I'm looking forward to that intro you were talking about Kevin Rose and Stank Dog and the Mud Wrestle. Oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, we were going to use that clip, but you couldn't see both of their faces.
Oh, damn. That sucks. Oh, man. And White Sword taped it, too. That was the best part.
Oh, well.
Anyway. So do we have an ETA? Are you willing to?
Yeah, the ETA was last week. So as soon as it's ready, it's coming together. It's getting ready to get thrown up there. Hopefully, Freaknik is not going to drag me down, which is coming up, by the way. Freaknik is this week. Freaknik is this week.
Oh shoot, we might have to get you back on here and have a Freaknik wrap up.
Yeah, so anybody's going to be going to Freaknik, you can see me there. I'll be hanging out with, like, Droops and Tabiz and RM Pants and all that lot. So if you're going to make it up to Freaknik, we're going to have the camera there. We're going to try to film a lot more Hack TV while we're up there, too. You never know who we can run into doing something crazy. Or you never know what you're going to walk across and find. So
is Mrs. Droops going to be there?
I don't believe Mrs. Droops is going to be there.
Oh, she's introduced one of the Hack TV episodes. And I'm sure Droops is steaming right now.
Oh wow! Yeah, definitely. We all
love
Mrs.
Droops.
Well,
if he's in the sauna, yeah.
Yeah, we all love you, Droops, and we love Mrs. Droops too. I'm not meaning that in a derogatory statement, but anyway.
I love Droops stickers for his radio show.
Infonomicon.
Oh, yeah. Dude, those stickers rocked. I still have one around here someplace.
Yeah,
I think I pasted on my laptop.
Oh, cool! I've got on my fridge. I've got the Special Olympics of Internet Radio.
Yeah, I decided to rice out my laptop a couple of weeks ago and use all my spare stickers that I got from DEF CON and just slap it on the side. So
nice.
I should take a photo of that. And I swear my laptop runs like definitely like a P4 right now. And before it used to be a P2 233, and it runs like a P4 because I put all the stickers on it. I learned that trick from the ricers.
Stickers make it go faster.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Also,
the
black makes it go faster.
Yes, a neon. I should add some neon on that.
You need ground effects on your laptop.
OMG! Ground effects. Oh, God. I haven't heard someone say that in forever.
That would be pretty sick, to have a clear laptop with ground effects on the bottom.
Actually, one of my friends was at the MIT Flea. I absolutely didn't go to the MIT Flea. The wind was too bad, and they were on and off closing the bridge that I used to get into Boston. So I decided to stay home and catch up on my sleep. But apparently the new thing is, what is it? It's a neon light, but it has, like, strobe lights at the end, and it's supposed to look like, what is it, like lightning or something and crazy
stuff. Does
it have
spinners, too?
Oh, man, that's what I should do. I should get, like, a spinner and put it in front of one of my fan vents so it, like,
that
trails around all the time.
No, your CD-ROMs are the things that need the spinners.
Anyway,
I think we're getting way off track.
Yeah,
now.
We are. Well, it's pretty personal hacking stories. I mean, we're all talking about stuff we can do to our PCs. So
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Actually, going back to the video thing, I actually put up a blog entry on this for those of you who don't visit my site. I was very ho hum about Apple's video iPod until I was looking at the next day that when did that get released? That got released like Thursday or something, right?
The 12th, yes.
Yes, whatever that was, and I was very ho hum on it, and basically the talking heads. I really didn't like look at anything on Apple's site or look at any of the live blogging stuff that they had all over the place that all the Apple diehards were doing. And I just caught the tidbits on the 6 o'clock news, and they were saying, actually, I was watching an ABC affiliate, so they were pumping it out like no tomorrow because you can download all the ABC shows onto it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. Nothing spectacular, but oh well.
And so, you can have Desperate Housewives in your pocket, inches from your crotch.
Now, is there a copyright issue on that yet? Has that been decided, like with a legal precedent, as to the legality of having a television show on your hard drive?
Oh, what they did is it's official. They made a partnership with ABC.
Does it have commercials?
No, but you pay for it. You pay like $2 a shot.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's a great idea because a lot of people are going out to the peer-to-peer networks and are just downloading shows that way. If they had a centralized database where, you know, for $2 you can download the episode of Stargate SG-1 you missed, I think a lot of people would use a service like that.
I think it's pretty cool. I think it's not going to make BitTorrent go away anytime soon, but
of course,
it makes you feel a bit more honest. I mean, I love iTunes Music Store. Cruising along, listening to WFNX in Boston, and oh, here, that song's pretty good, and I just pop over to iTunes Music Store and buy my song, and life is good. It's pretty nice, and I like the TV thing, and it was a good idea. Problem is, it's only supported by ABC now, but hopefully it'll take off, and other people will start getting on board. But I was, next day during my lunch break, because I had nothing better to do, I checked out Apple.com and looked at all the reviews about it. I read on Slashdot and found out this very interesting thing called video blogging, which apparently it's like podcast for your videos, because apparently, well, of course, you can. It's XML, so you can RSS anything. But there's apparently all these TV shows out there, and now this got me intrigued, because this would be very cool. I was thinking about doing something on my pocket PC for this, that I could have like a weekly geek radio TV show and just have something like that. And if someone could actually do that, that would kick ass. So I actually bounced this off a couple of people, and there could be something in the works where it's a sort of a weekly talkish type show. But
with talking heads, basically.
Yeah, well, not that, but we're going to do a little more, like, you can do a lot more stuff on TV. It's a whole lot easier to look at a screenshot than to describe what it's going on TV.
That's true.
Yes. Oh, look, it's kind of got a green background, and there's icons on the left, and it's pretty neat. I mean, I can show you a video iPod rather than actually just sort of describe what it looks like. Not that I have a video iPod. I'm not buying one anytime soon. But still, it introduced an interesting concept, and I think if this takes off, that this whole making your own TV shows could really just do what the whole radio show thing did about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we could be living in exciting times.
And good luck to everybody who tries to put together a 30-minute production show every week.
Yeah, I know.
Good luck. I'd love to see it. But, I mean, that's a huge time investment.
Well, not only that. I mean, the hard part is what you just got to do is you got to get a couple of weeks ahead, and you can't just, you know, instantly do everything and try to burn out. Oh, not try to burn out, but end up burning out.
Or you could get in and you could do what Twat Radio is doing, and you could have maybe 5 or 6 different hosts, and, you know, each one has a week. That might not be a bad idea.
Oh, yeah. Actually,
really well.
we should plug them, because I don't think I ever actually talked about that. Twat Radio, do we have a website for them? I don't have that handy.
Let me Google, hold on.
Twat Radio, it's this week, well, this with a techie or something. Droops is getting really pissed at me right now. I'm actually going to be on Wednesday, so that'll be up there tomorrow for you guys. It would be twatech.org. So it's a daily radio show, and it's done all with different people. So, for example, I'm doing it on the 19th, and then I think the next day Troops is doing it. And it's exciting, it's cool, it's a very interesting concept, and I'm kind of excited with it. Of course, I haven't listened to one yet. I'm not going to admit that on air. Oh, I just did. Oh, well. come Tuesday, I am going to film, right now, after we're done taping, I'm going to fill my iPod up and listen to them all day so I can get caught up on them and find out what the hell I'm supposed to do.
And they're not that long either, so you just get like a nice little tidbit of whatever it is that the current topic is.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be at least 5 minutes. I believe. And I'm going to shoot for 15 or so, but who knows. So check that out. I will be on tomorrow. That'll be Wednesday. That'll be the 19th. So I'm doing some topic. I have like two or three that I haven't decided upon, but check me out. And check out the website. It's really cool. TWATech, TECH.org. So, Strom, what have you been doing?
Nothing extraordinarily intriguing. I've kind of got two like kind of silly projects going on. The first one is it's been raining here in Los Angeles, and this was more of an unintentional project. I had two deck multias that didn't really work. I tried to turn them on, and it just didn't work. They've been sitting on my balcony forever, and it's finally started raining, and they've been just getting totally drenched. So I'll post photos up on my website after this whole rain thing blows over of what they look like after being rained on for a couple days.
I don't think they're going to work after being rained on. So
yeah, well, they didn't work before being rained on either, so it's not like...
So, well, there was no net gain or no net loss, so we're good.
Exactly. Well, net gain and seeing what happened.
Yeah, why were you putting them out on your balcony in the first place?
I think I was cleaning up, and I just needed somewhere to put them, and the balcony was a convenient place at the time.
Is that commonplace in Silicon Valley, you know?
Silicon Valley is a couple hundred miles north of me. I don't know what you're talking
about. I don't know. Southern, all the cool hackers live in SoCal.
Yeah.
Hackers and freaks.
Mm-hmm.
You, Lucky, Doug. Yeah. Oh, they got Silicon Valley down there. Silicon Valley's in SoCal, right?
No, Silicon Valley is in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Isn't that Northern California? That's Northern California.
At least a six-hour drive north of here.
I'm in eastern Massachusetts. There's no screwing up there.
And the other thing that I've done is that I've got I have an answering machine tape that I found at the thrift store that I started listening to just to see what the hell someone else's incoming messages sound like. It's actually pretty funny, so as soon as I get a real tape deck instead of just playing the back of an answering machine, I'll put the funnier ones online.
Nice.
You picked it up at a thrift store, so you were at, like, Goodwill or something.
Yeah, somebody's incoming message tape.
Wow. And they didn't erase it. Wow.
Nope.
See, this is just a kind of a low-tech story about people not erasing hard drives and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Idiots.
Exactly. But their idiocy, my gain.
Yes. Well, we all look forward to it. There you go. She get on TWA Tech and go make a answering machine show.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, you can do that. Just
answering
5 minutes.
Machine archaeology.
Yeah. And I believe, actually, Droops... I think I said that. Droops is running it, and so is an Iron Geek. They're looking for additional DJs, as it were.
Well, I'll certainly do one.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just they're looking for a commitment, like, you know, once a month or whatever. So just send, I believe it's right on their website, volunteer for it. It's a cool project, and it's an interesting idea. And if you're kind of lazy, much like me, you can just sort of back off and only do it once a month. Unlike me, who I do a weekly radio show that's about an hour and a half with Strom. Wow, I'm stupid.
You idiot.
Yes. So let's go move on to our main topic tonight. And our main topic tonight is Thor.
Yay!
Thor, the Norse god of thunder? No.
I'm Thor, take an aspirin. Yes. I'm so funny. No. Tor is the anonymous proxy made by the EFF.
Well, I don't think it's made by the EFF. It's endorsed by the EFF.
What can we say about Tor? Tor is great. Tor is awesome.
For the Onion Router, doesn't it?
It's sort of it's a really nice program. It's a tool set for a wide range of organizations and people who want to improve their safety and security on the Internet. Using Tor can help you anonymize web browsing through publishing, instant messaging, IRC, SSH, and or any other applications that use TCP protocol. Just sort of rip that right off the main page. Basically, what it is it's a proxy, and you can fire your packets off through it, TCP, because UDP would be horrible latency on it.
Well, UDP
and
will not function over Tor.
It won't?
No, it will only accept TCP packets.
Well, it kind of makes sense, because who would actually want to run UDP through it? Because UDP is a very kind of, they want to make it get there really, really fast, and the one problem about Tor is that it's really slow. Zygmunt, you're sort of the expert on Tor. You did a lot more, you did a lot of research into this. Do you want to explain how Tor works?
Well, basically, what you get with Tor is you're going to run that client. We'll get into details about it later, but you're going to run a Tor client on your computer. You're going to point whatever. You're going to send data through the Tor client, and from there, it's going to go to the entry node, which is one computer that is running a Tor server that's going to allow you to connect to it. As soon as you make this connection, this is an encrypted connection with specific keys that are used so that only these two, you and the first node, you're the only two people who know each other. Then this first node talks to the second node, but the second node doesn't know who initiated the packet. It only knows the person immediately behind it, which is the first node, and who it's sending it to, the third node. From there, that second node is going to forward it to the third node, which is going to usually be the exit node, which is where it's going to be decrypted and go ahead and sent out to go wherever it is you need to go, be it a web page, IRC, FTP, whatever, whatever.
So basically what it is you got this black box, and just sort of picture a black box that's about a foot long by a foot wide and about 6 inches tall, and you can put a marble on one end, and it'll come out the other side in one of many holes, and you never know where that marble is coming in or going out from, depending on which side you're looking at it. You have to look at both sides, which is physically impossible with Tor. That was a really bad analogy, but it sounded good at the time.
Yeah, it seems to work for me.
Yes.
Well, then you get into the whole problem with, and we might as well just bring it up now, the main problem that can exist with Tor that can really work against your anonymity is if you have what's called a global adversary, which is somebody who can see a large portion of the Internet and has the ability to do, and you're going to talk about this later, traffic analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do from there is, let's say I can see 30% of the interweb, whatever. You know, I'm the man, I have control of all these massive servers that everything's being routed to.
I thought you didn't want to admit that.
That's true.
Who is she?
Now we know Zygmunt's the man.
That's exactly what happened. That's why I am doing the radio show for free. Anyway.
Because he can afford it. Because you're the man, and you have all the money. And for 30% of the Internet, apparently. But anyway, getting on it. So say you control 30% of the Internet.
Or you just have the ability to look and see what's going on. You could actually say, okay, these are all the entrance nodes, these are all the exit nodes of Tor. Let me line up the times. I can't see what it is you're saying, but I can see that you're talking to so-and-so just by comparing the times. That is, it's such a large undertaking that it's practically and statistically impossible. But, it's still, theoretically, it's something that could happen.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's statistically impossible, but
that's true.
At the same point, it would be very, very, very difficult. I mean, statistically, you can crack RC5, but or RC5-128, but it'll just take a really, really, really long time.
But for the most part, you can really use Tor for your anonymity needs, and we'll get into things that actually deal with it. But why don't you go ahead and tell us what traffic analysis is?
Well, do traffic now, I mean, you got people who, you know, you're at work, you're at an internet cafe, and you don't know what's going on. Your boss could be looking at you, your work could be running some type of web analyzation software that watches everything that goes across and logs it. Heck, you're in China. China has a great firewall that does everything that want to go, or heck, if you just basically they want to log everything that goes out there and make sure that all their Chinese citizens don't visit these naughty democracy sites. Or on the other end of the thing, you got J Random Hacker, Hacksor, sitting in the coffee shop with you, and you don't know what the heck's going on. You're checking your email, but all of a sudden he's running Kismet, just logging everything across the wireless LAN there. Yeah, I just sort of completely drew a blank on what the hell that was called. So people out there, they want to keep track of where you're going. They want to keep track of what you're doing. They want to keep track of things. I mean, you got advertising companies out there that want to track what you're buying and what you're doing. They just track everything that you do. It's scary. It's annoying. It's stupid. So what Tor does is basically you fire it off. You use that as your first. You use your as a proxy, and it encrypts everything, so they can't see anything that you're using. And the first step, so say I'm using Tor and I'm trying to check my mail. I connect to Tor. I configure Tor to actually connect to my want to connect out, and I connect configure my mail program to use Tor to connect to my mail server. That foils A, the evil person trying to monitor my thing in the internet cafe. And if I'm in an internet cafe in China, all the Chinese government says is you see this encryption connection going out. And hopefully,
well, something that you should mention about Tor real quick is actually most Tor outlets will block port 25.
Oh, really? They will?
Most will block port 25 to prevent spammers from using Tor.
Yeah, we will cover all that later with all nice little caveats there. And what it is like, for example, if I was checking my mail on port 110 using POP3, it's all encrypted. People can't see it, and all the person at the end knows when they actually get released unencrypted out to the internet is that someone's checking a mail place. They don't know where I am. They don't know who I am. They just know that someone somewhere is checking their mail on such and such a server or going to such and such a website. They don't know who I am. They don't know what I'm doing. They don't know that I'm in China.
And they don't know what other sites you've gone to.
Exactly. Like, because I send out one packet, and every 5 minutes or so, it changes my path about. But let's cover how it works. What happens is, you know, Zygmunt gave a kind of basic explanation that I use my computer to – here's how I have it set up. I have, like, run it on my computer, and I configure all my programs to use it as a proxy. And then what my computer does is it has a giant list someplace of other nodes on the net, of the Tor net that they can use. So my computer connects out to one of those nodes. And then that node consults its giant list of other nodes to connect to, and it connects to one of those nodes. And you know, this happens for like two or three hops. And at which point, after it sees that it's been two or three hops and has been sufficiently masqueraded, you can't actually trace it back unless you're doing all that hardcore traffic snooping that Zygmunt was talking about. It finally consults a list of quote-unquote exit nodes. And what exit nodes are they're Tor computers that people have graciously set up that say, hey, you also use me to bounce your connections off, you know, between Tor nodes, but you can also use me to access the direct internet. And what that does is, the second to last node connects to one of those exit nodes, and then the exit node unencrypts my traffic and sends it and forwards it along. And every 5 minutes or so, what it does is it changes the path of my connection. So say I was using, you know, my node to node 1 to node 2 to node 3 to node 4. Now it kind of whips it all around and goes my node to node 5 to node 6 to node 7 to node 8. So it kind of jerks it around, and like node 4 can't see everything that I'm doing or seeing that someone's actually visiting this website all the time. It actually bounces over to node 8, and node 8 knows that, as far as it knows, is that I instantly just started going to this website.
But
or mail
it's
server.
Important to note that node 8 has no idea who node 5 is.
Mm-hmm. And at the same point that node 8 doesn't know who node 5 is, and node 5 doesn't know who node 8 is, and heck, neither of them know who I am at node, Alpha, I guess you could call me. Nobody knows who I am. It just knows that someone somewhere on the Tor network who's using Tor is visiting this website. It's sufficiently randomized and such that it makes it very difficult for people to track. And once you're in the Tor network, it's very difficult to actually. It's all encrypted, and you really can't tell what the hell's going on.
Absolutely.
So is that an in-depth explanation? Did that make sense?
I think it sounded good.
So it's what it is that it's pretty much randomized. FreeNet? FreeNet's another kind of implementation of this, and it uses some of the same principles, but they're actually kind of moving over to a more Tor-like network, because with FreeNet, if you ever used it, it's slow. It's really, really slow. Tor is slow because you're lengthening your internet. And, for example, Node 1 could be in Massachusetts. Node 1 could be in California. Meanwhile, Node 2 could be in southern Indonesia, for all I know. And so with all these hops you got, you're going to slow down your connection. There is a noticeable lag when you're using Tor. But with FreeNet, let's say I clicked on a link, and I could come back a half hour later, and it still hadn't loaded. And it's still trying to connect to it and trying to figure out where it is. Freenet's slightly different. There's certain like local caching going on. And there's a lot more complex stuff with it, and it's a really cool program. I'm not trying to knock it, but with I'd like to say that Tor is a overall better system.
I mean, I can absolutely agree with what you're saying there. I think a major difference, like Freenet also implements like geolocations and putting things next to each other that are, and then they have all these complex equations. They actually gave a talk about it on at DEF CON 13. But what Tor is doing is taking a lot of the extra work out, and it's just, you know, it's just making a pipe. When you get down to it, Tor is just, it's acting like your chain of proxies. You know, it's just connecting things together, and it's acting as a pipe. Your biggest latency is going to be from going, exactly, from Massachusetts to California to Indonesia to Taiwan back to the United States for your actual web page. You have latency in the time it's going to take from a packet to traverse the distance. Also, it's being encrypted along the way.
And also with the exit nodes is that exit nodes are, on the Tor network, they are quite few and far between. And you have people out there abusing this network. We'll get into that later. And these people could be running on massive connections, but at the same time, all of this traffic is trying to be shoved out these exit nodes. So it could be very laggy, and heck, you never know. Someone could actually configure an exit node on a 56K connection just to screw everyone over.
It's possible.
Because they're mean and annoying and very make me sad. So it's the lag's there, and it's encrypted, and you have all this stuff, and even if I'm going from my computer upstairs to my server downstairs that is on an internet address, it could be routed halfway across the world for all I know.
And probably will be.
And it probably will be. I when I use Tor every once in a while, my paranoid self, I go to check out my IP address on one of like the 15 different, you know, what is my IPaddress.com, or I don't even know if that's a real website.
Yeah, what is my IP.com?
Oh, really? Okay. I have one bookmarked. I don't even know what it's called. And I see myself going from Germany to MIT to, I believe I actually saw one in Moscow. That was pretty weird. And it's just like connections all over the place. It's so, like, when he says it's most likely routed around the world, it is most likely routed around the world. And I'd just like to send shouts out to all these people running these exit servers. Thank you so much. And I feel very sorry for people abusing your connections. So, okay. Now, since we were talking about Freenet. Freenet is only stuff that can be published within a Freenet network. And apparently you can also do this with Tor, right?
Yes.
Zygmunt, you're much more expert on this than I can.
Tor has what are called hidden services. And what that basically means is, let's say that you want to have a web page that's published, but you don't want anybody to know that you're the one publishing that web page. You don't want them to know where you are physically. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons for this. Let's say you're publishing a very controversial website about whatever, animal rights. And fact of the matter is, you don't want your address out there. You don't want people stalking you. You don't want to have to register. You don't have to register who is, et cetera, et cetera. What Tor provides is these hidden services. You can run a web server, an FTP server, an IRC server from within the Tor network, and then instead of www.animalrights.com, it changes into animalrights.onion. And what happens is Onion is a DNS entry that can only be resolved by Tor servers. So by connecting to this Tor network, when you set up a hidden service, wherever that server is located, it tells all the other Tor nodes, hey, if anybody asks for this, send it to this place. You go ahead, and that place is also shifting because it's just a temporary address among all the different nodes. The only way that you can actually prove that you are who you say you are is through the use of keys. Tor is very heavy on keys. When you set up a hidden service, you actually have a private key that proves that you are the person who is running this private service. You're getting to the point where you have a network inside of a network. You can use Tor to publish content that might otherwise be questionable or objectionable. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that's illegal. It could really just be something as simple as, this is my website. I don't want people knocking on my door. I don't want the solicited spam mail for having a who is info. I don't want any of this jazz. And it's another great feature of Tor that you can have this network inside the network.
So does it use Tor only has its own DNS servers, or would
it
everything
does, it
go?
It has its own way of finding itself. I don't really want to call it a DNS server because it's not doing the exact same thing. It's not turning a host name into an IP address, which is when I think DNS server, that's what I think. But what this is, it's going to turn that host name into a Tor location. You know, it's advertised as this for the next however long, this is where you can find this specific web page. So you can go to, in your web browser, all set up through Tor, www.animalrights.onion, and you'll go to the Animal Rights Onion web page. Like that's a true web page that you can go to just like a regular web page. It's set up with your favorite server application, be it Apache or any other web server. And you have the ability to open up your own hidden, for lack of a better word, hidden websites where people can't track. They have no idea what hardware you're running on. They don't even know where you're physically located. I mean, it takes out a huge part of footprinting, which is if you're going to go after a system, you try to find out, is it co-located? Who else is it located with? What kind of hardware is it running? What's the operating system, et cetera, et cetera? Something like Tor is going to really, really make it difficult for anybody to try anything like that. You can't port scan it. You can't port scan an IP address that doesn't really exist. You don't know what the IP address is. You might be able to find the exact client that is being used for whatever service you're trying to find. But if I'm going to be a responsible person, I'm going to make sure my stuff is updated and patched and everything's nice and clean. It's, from a security standpoint, it might be a little slower, but it's a lot more secure to not have to divulge all of your details. And that's really what Tor is about. It's a lot less about, oh, I'm going to hide and do this. It's, you know, it's no business of yours who I am. I'm coming, I'm looking at your content, and I'm moving on with my life. I don't want to be tracked. I don't want to be sold something. And that's where people are coming up to Tor and using maybe a hidden service because, you know, this isn't something that the world needs to know that I'm seeing this. You know,
Amen!
There's a lot of things that I don't want everybody to know that I like going to this website, be it whatever it is. And anybody who says anything, you're in trouble. But anyway, I mean, a hidden service is something that you can easily set up with Tor. It's just a couple of edited lines in config files with a hidden service port, hidden service name, you know, and you register it. It's not even a difficult thing. And I wish I knew the cost if there was one. But other than that...
Well, I mean, the cost would just be what your hardware and your processing time and all that stuff. I mean, and you're also just talking about websites, but does that means that it's not just it has to be websites. It can be, you're saying, like FTP, like, for example, if I can run a SSH server. I don't know why I would want a hidden SSH server, but I could do it on Tor, right?
Absolutely. Now, you get details about how your actual clients are going to have to use Tor, and we'll cover those programs in a minute or so. But you could really run just about any kind of service on any port you want. You know, you could run your own custom application on whatever port you want. It doesn't have to be built into the server software. It's just set up, you know, because all you're really doing is you're binding it to a local port and then telling Tor anything that comes through that local port, send through my server, and then Tor's taking care of the rest for you.
God bless Tor.
Absolutely.
Or deity bless Tor. How about that for our... Actually, if you're atheist, you'll screw you. So basically, how would I get Tor running? I have Tor. Now, what else might I need? I know this. So basically, you run Tor. I think there's binaries available for Windows, but what I just do is I run it on my Linux box. I compile it down, and everything's good. And I have it up and running. What else do I need?
Well, as you were saying, there are binaries for Windows. There's source. You know, there's a million different ways of getting it. One way or another, get the software. Great. Next thing you need something. Tor is really just the pipe. That's all it really does for you. You need to use something on top of that to add to your anonymity. And a good, and actually an excellent program that Tor recommends is Privoxy. And what that is it's an HTTP SOX proxy. And one major problem with Tor is that it leaks DNS requests. If you put in, if you weren't using something like Privoxy and you put in www.google.com, that's going to go to your name servers, your DNS, whatever, and it's going to resolve to an IP address, but that's going to come directly from your computer. That's not going through Tor. So somebody who's being really careful can look and see, oh, well, he's asking for these different IP addresses. He's going to these sites.
Dr. Zygmunt's looking at naked houseofnakedbabes.com.
Exactly, you know? But I don't want everybody to know that. I don't want everybody to see the DNS records attached to my true IP address. So I use something like Privoxy. What that does is it's going to force the DNS requests through Tor or use the Tor DNS plugins and different things like that. And it's going to, first, it's going to allow you to have a clean DNS where you're not going to leak that information as to who it is who's actually looking up the hosts. From there, what else Privoxy does, which is really nice, is it takes out all the ads, or most of the ads.
Mm-hmm. Privoxy, even by itself, without Tor, is a very handy I guess you could call it web filtering, but it filters out the stuff you don't want to see, like ads and annoying flash things. And I think it actually has some limited worm support on there too. It's a fun program to play around with, even if you're not using Tor.
If you're forced to use
Internet Explorer for some reason, use Privoxy. It'll make your life easier.
And it also will clean up the headers for you. It'll take your IP address out of headers. It'll warn you if certain things are being done that could reveal who you are, things like that. Privoxy is an excellent program for that, and you can't just use a web browser with Tor unless you have one that supports SOX 4A, which is the version of SOX that works based on host names rather than IP addresses. But if you want to use your Mozilla or your Firefox or your Internet Explorer with it, or Conquer, for that matter, any web browser, you're going to need to use Privoxy or some sort of HTTP proxy, and that's what's going to allow you to utilize that pipeline that Tor is opening up for you.
You can set up your web browser to use Tor by itself, but at the same time you get that DNS thing. So you don't necessarily need Privoxy, but at the same point, just use it. Don't bother. I mean, it'll make your life a whole lot easier.
And it'll warn you if you're doing something dangerous. It'll come,
oh, yeah.
It'll come flat out and a big pop-up that says, warning, are you sure you want to do X?
Well, I don't think it actually comes up with a pop-up, but at the same point, if you look at your console, which normally is what Tor runs at default, on default, it'll say, hey, you're sending this out. This is bad. You're just sending an IP address to us. That means you're probably querying a DNS server. Would you like to? You really should install Privoxy. And it actually says that right there. It says, you know, Privoxy, use that. Don't. You're doing something bad. You're very, very bad.
Well, Privoxy will also load up that white background screen that I'm sure you've seen with the red and the blue on it.
Mm-hmm.
Which will warn you about things. It all depends on what exactly it is you're doing. But as far as HTTP goes and your web surfing, you really should use Privoxy. Or there's one web browser that allows you to use Tor directly without DNS leaking. But it's definitely not one of the common ones. It's something for Apple, and forgive me for not knowing the exact name of it. But most web browsers would really benefit from using something like Privoxy. And if you're already going through the trouble to use Tor, you know, you might as well.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I set it up right away, actually. I set it up almost immediately afterwards. I wanted to fool around with it first and get a feel for it, because I couldn't be asked to set up Privoxy. But I played with it for about, you know, an hour or so, and I said, okay, time to do this. And I was like, wow, okay, this is just infinitely better. And because Privoxy just has all those features that Tor doesn't. Like I said, Tor is a pipe. Privoxy actually uses that pipe very efficiently. It scrubs everything you want out of your HTTP request. Like, for example, if anyone actually looks at my HTTP request, it'll see that I'm actually running Internet Explorer 7. Oops, little white lie. And I actually gave it insane specs. Like, I think it's Internet Explorer 7.1. Just for the hell of it.
And Privoxy is really easy to configure with Tor as well. Right on the website, they tell you the one line you have to add to it and the two lines you comment out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and there's pictures. I mean, it's screen captures of exactly what to change, so it's not difficult at all to set up.
It's amazingly simple. I actually think the proxy that I downloaded, you didn't have to do everything. They actually fixed a couple of things.
Oh, and really? They already had that added in there?
I think so. Some of the stuff, like the two things they told you to comment out because that's bad.
The log.
I believe if you looked in their change log, they said, "Oh yeah, that's a really good idea. We should do that." And so I didn't have to comment it out. So that was very handy.
Now, do you know that proxy is actually based on? And I have it written down right here, so I'm going to look it up since I have the benefit of actually having that. But proxy is actually based on
Netscape?
On JunkBuster.
Oh, yes.
JunkBuster was a project that ended right around 1998 was their last release. It was version 2.0.2. And what basically proxy picked up where JunkBuster left off. You know, JunkBuster was great in 1998, but now in 2005, we have all these crazy tricks that people are doing. You know, there's tricks with JavaScript. We're not on HTTP 1.1 anymore. You know, it's just not where we are. So Privoxy is the improvement of JunkBuster.
Yes, JunkBuster was fine, but the spammers and the ad doers have gotten much more smarter since 1998, sadly. And so, therefore, it really didn't work. So Privoxy picked up the torch and is doing an excellent job carrying it. So okay, there's Tor. Tor provides a pipe. Proxy provides the, I guess you'd call it the HTTP server. Yes. Now, is there any other things you can use with Tor that makes your life easier or more fun?
Now, if you wanted to connect to an FTP server, you can't
do that.
How
would I do that?
You can't do that through Privoxy, because Privoxy is only an HTTP proxy. It doesn't understand the messaging, the protocol, things like that. What you need to do is force a pipe through Tor. There are a bunch of different programs that do that. TSOX is one, but my favorite is SOCAT. And you can get that right off of the Tor website. They have a million links to it. And what SOCAT does is it will actually form, let's say I want to connect to Google.com on port 21 because I want to access their FTP server, whatever, great. I go ahead and I give the command to SOCAT, and SOCAT has, I love this program, I really do, but it has the worst command line options I've ever heard in my entire life. I actually wrote a program just to pass the command line options because they're so weird. But anyway, so they're clear about what it is. You can write your own program, or if you want, I'll post it on the forums, whatever. What it does is it'll form that connection. You tell it, I want to connect to www.google.com port 21, pipe it to localhost port 9999. And then all I have to do is use my normal FTP, and I can FTP to localhost 9999, and that is the exact equivalent of actually FTPing directly to Google port 21, only this is going through Tor. And a program like SOCAT, which is going to be excellent for any programs that don't have built-in SOX proxy support, you're going to have to go through a program like SOCAT. And that'll work for just about anything, for SSH, it's protocol independent. All it's doing is creating the pipe for you. Now, one drawback with SOCAT, and you get the same drawback when using Tor for an IRC conversation or something that's an extended connection, is that you're not going to have the same jumping from nodes to nodes. If I connect using Tor, if I use Tor with SOCAT and I connect to my favorite IRC server, which would happen to be Downnet, channel bin res, go, anyway. But it's
shameless plug.
Exactly. It's going to keep the same route the entire time. It's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, because if I was going to keep changing routes, that's going to give somebody that much more chance to be able to see what it is I'm doing. If I just keep that one static route, you know, it's an open TCP connection. It doesn't hand off like that. And that's probably the only drawback behind Tor, is if you have an extended connection, Tor is much more effective when it's being used for browsing the web. Because you're going to be coming out of different IPs, different things like that. But if you just have the one connection, you know, it's still not you. You know, it's still coming out of somewhere else, it's still encrypted, it's still, I mean, you're not really getting tracked by it, but you're going to need to use a program like SOCAT or TSOX or something like that that's going to create that pipeline for you. It's going to be able to connect through there. And, I mean, that's a beautiful thing, especially if you're behind a firewall or something that doesn't allow a lot of traffic out through specific ports. If you can get Tor out, you can connect through any port you want because you're just tying it to the local host and then through Tor, and Tor's taking care of the rest. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, you really get into, you get into whatever protocol you want to use. You can really just bind it to a local host port through a program like SOCAT.
Except if it's UDP, of course, as we mentioned before.
UDP is not supported over Tor for a couple of reasons. Probably the first main reason is it's an entirely different protocol. To implement it would take that much more work. The second reason is, how are you going to get a response through a UDP packet?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no error checking. You know, it's just supposed to send it back to you, but who are you? You could be somebody different in 5 minutes. So UDP doesn't really work with Tor. You need to have a full TCP/IP. A TCP handshake. You need to have the full handshake to really utilize Tor. And
exactly.
And going through all that jazz, that's where you're going to end up. That's where you're going to try to walk with Tor. It's really, the beauty of it is it's a pipeline for you to use, and whoever you want to use it. You can use it for your web browsing. You can use it for your FTP. You can use it for anything. The only thing you really can't use it for is port 25, because a lot of exit nodes will block port 25. But
okay,
I mean,
well, since we're talking about that, what else do you have here? I'm sorry.
No, you can go ahead. Jump on in.
Well, I mean, so we're going to just kind of talk about the drawbacks and why people shouldn't be stupid. And there are exit nodes that block certain services, like, for example, port 25, because with Tor, as always, anonymity is a double-edged sword, because it's good because people can't track you, but at the same time, if someone's harassing you via Tor, you can't track them back. I've heard of a couple situations where people have complained to your favorite three-letter agency, and they have come to exit node saying, hey, why are you harassing this person? And there have been some legal troubles. I mean, the people. Nothing bad has happened to these people, but at the same time,
no one has actually sued Tor.
Yes, yet. I am sure it's coming, because one of the favorite things that all these little script kiddies do is now they try, oh, with Tor, the RIAA can't track me, so let me go set up my BitTorrent and download, the new Wallace and Gromit movie, and I'll just use BitTorrent. I'll be completely anonymous, which sounds good, and it will keep them anonymous, but at the same time, you're putting a tremendous load on these exit ports.
And not only that, you're not really being that anonymous. Because how do you think that tracker is being located unless you're resolving DNS for it? You're
mm-hmm.
still resolving to the tracker.
I mean, it is too anonymous. It's a lot more anonymous than running it off your public IP, but at the same point,
if you know what you're doing, you could definitely dance around it, absolutely.
Indeed. But, of course, not all these people are doing it that way, so there are probably just having a nice little false sense of security. And at the same point, you're really just ruining the network for everyone else, because I heard of somebody who said, oh, I got this nice connection, I'll go set up an exit port. And they had a T3 and at their work, and they got their boss's permission and everything, and they said, oh, how much bandwidth is it going to use? Oh, probably not a lot, probably, you know, a good-sized amount, but nothing horrible. And they ran it for 24 hours, and they basically denial of service their entire site because of all the traffic coming out of it. And
wow.
They promptly shut it down.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't denial of service it, but the lag was noticeable, and I think they took up a good chunk of their T3, which is just disgusting. And when they did they did traffic analyzation on it, much to his chagrin, but he finally had to figure out what the hell is going on with this thing, like configuring it wrong, and they just saw BitTorrent.
That's really unfortunate that's what it's coming down to.
Yeah. So, as always, anonymity is a double-edged sword. And also, yeah, I'm sure you can relate to this, how easy is it to get on IRC through Tor?
Oh, it is very, very difficult. And the reason behind is a network like Downnet that's having a lot of large problems right now with trolls or people just coming in spamming, they're blocking every exit node. Because all the exit nodes are made public. I don't know if people realize that. The exit nodes are public. There is a place where you can look at every exit node for Tor. But who cares, you know? Who cares if you know where I'm coming from? You just don't know exactly where I am. You might know my exit node, but you're going to know that anyway because you're going to have the IP address show up in your logs. But what IRC is doing is they're blocking all of the Tor outlets. Not every network is doing that. You know, it's up to the individual networks.
And even downloading up to the individual servers.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you can even go so far to say it's up to the individual exit node, because the exit node can arbitrarily block whatever ports they want to. It is their decision.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them won't, you know, because it kind of defeats the purpose, you know, of granting you this great service. Oh, and by the way, you can't use this or this or this and this. But, I mean, you're definitely seeing that problem now where because of some a few people are creating a problem.
No,
people are,
tell it like it is. Because of a couple of assholes, well, actually more than a couple, probably a good handful of assholes are ruining the service for a lot of decent, hardworking netizens.
I mean, let's be honest. It's not like really hardcore criminals are using Tor. There's no reason for them to use Tor. Tor isn't perfect. It's a little bit slower than the rest of the internet. A hardcore criminal is using his bot network or using compromised systems to walk through. He's not the one who's really, you know, everybody makes Tor out to be, well, if you're anonymous, you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing. That's not the case. You know, it's not a matter of Tor is a safe haven for criminals. That's not at all true. A criminal is going to do whatever they want to do anyway. A criminal is not a hacker. We're not going to start this debate again. But a true criminal can get access to whatever server they want anonymously anyway. Mm-hmm. What Tor is doing is it's making it so that not only criminals have privacy. And it gets to a point where in whatever country, whatever world, if only criminals have privacy, then what are we saying to the average person? The average person isn't allowed to have any sort of privacy. His rights can be trampled on, exposed to everybody. This is why the EFF is standing so hard behind Tor. It's going to give the common person the ability to be anonymous and to have his web surfing private. It's not a matter of something illegal going on. It's trying to even out the balance of power here. If the only people who are really being able to do anything that they want to do are the criminals who are already willing to break the law, what are we saying about ourselves as a population that we're not allowing the free dissemination of ideas?
Indeed. And again, I'm going to toss out this plug again. It's a book. It's called Crypto, and it's by Stephen Levy, L-E-V-Y. And for anyone interested in cryptology and this whole anonymity and, you know, keeping the government off your back, you really should read it. It's a really cool book. It's basically the history of the crypto movement. You just read it. It's good. Ratchet recommended. All that stuff.
I'm going to have to pick that up.
Yeah, it's good. So,
why don't you cover the last bit about Tor being it really depends on what you put into it.
Oh, I mean, that's just common sense, really. I just sort of tossed that out there, but I wasn't sure if I was going to say it. But since you brought it up, obviously, Tor is what you put into it. I mean, you're not going to keep anonymous if, for example, if I go over to, you know, I don't know, some website, you know, ratchetshouseofporn.com, and I sign up and I say, oh, it says Black Ratchet, my credit card number is XXXXXXX. And if someone's monitoring that on the exit node or somewhere downstream of that, they can trace that back to that IP. And sure, it's only good for a certain amount of time period, but I'm basically blowing my anonymity away. If, for example, I didn't do anything over to that, they wouldn't know who the hell I was. I'd just be a random IP. But for that, you know, somewhat time being, they actually know who I am. So, and also if I'm sending out usernames, if I'm sending out passwords, I don't see why anyone would want to use an unencrypted service over Tor in the first place. Because even though you're going directly on the exit node, if someone has compromised that exit node or someone is looking at that exit node, they'll be able to sniff your passwords and everything. So while it's anonymous, it's not perfect. So basically, just don't put any identifying information out there while you're doing this. It's literally just use common sense. It's kind of obvious, and I think most people here will understand that. Hey, I shouldn't actually give out my name and address when I'm using an anonymous proxy. But some people will, and we just want to work hard and enlighten those folks. So, yes, do we want to give some links out here? So we can go tor.eff.org. That's tor.eff.org. And Privoxy. That's www.privoxy.org. And do you have the website for SOCAT? Because I don't have that one.
You know, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I know it's right there on the links, and while you're chatting, I'll look it up just to make sure.
So, Tor's cool. I again, Ratchet approved, I guess. I should get a nice little like rubber stamp or something.
It sounds cool to me, too. I probably should download it and play with it or something.
Yes. You should really use it, and it's just fun to play around with, if nothing else. Just check out how it works. Look at the website. They provide some very in-depth information on how their it stands for something onion routing. I actually never actually said
the
what.
Onion
the
router.
Onion router.
The
yeah.
onion router. There
I think
we go.
I said that at the beginning of the show, actually.
No, I could be wrong. I don't know. But Tor's cool. Do we have a website yet?
Yes. The SOCAT Multipurpose Relays website is DESTUNRAACH.org/SOCAT, which is SOCAT, but it's really easy to find just from the main Tor website. Even on the page where you download Tor itself, there's links to it. So it shouldn't be too much of an issue to find.
And remember that SOCAT, not SoCal.
Exactly.
Ah, I'm so funny.
Southern cat. Ha ha ha.
Yes.
Who is this?
Anyway.
You just cost me $6,000. So, announcements. We have a couple announcements this week.
Yeah. Namaskit says that the Binro 508 meeting is this Friday at the Borders in Framingham around 6 p.m. 85 Worcester Road off Route 9. That's 508.binrevmeetings.com.
I won't be there, despite it actually being in Massachusetts. I have a previous engagement. Everyone wants to meet me, I know, but I won't be there. I think they were planning the Boston 2600. Some folks out there were planning a field trip out to Framingham and will be at that meeting. I'm not 100% sure, but if you're in the Massachusetts area, head on out there, Framingham. And if you're going out in Framingham anyway, check out the Verizon Framingham Tandem, giant, god-large building with a huge antenna on top, and it's fun to look at, and just think all your long-distance calls are being routed through there.
Yay.
We also have Merck, M-E-R-K, who is complaining that we don't have enough in international letters or something. He also wants to be, he's thinking about setting up a BINREV meeting in the 301-202 area code, and that's D.C. in the suburbs and Maryland, I believe.
Yeah, D.C. is 202, and then Maryland is 301, and then there's an overlay for 301, there's like, what is it, 240 or something?
I believe there's 410 out there as well.
Yeah, 410 is another half of Maryland.
Yeah. Anyway, he says anyone who might be interested for information or wanting to help him out, email him at merck@twatech.org, and that's merck@twatech.org. Just email him. BINREV 561 meeting. Actually, you want to say this one since you know what the hell's going on?
Sure. The BINREV 561 meeting, it should be this week, but it is being pushed back a week. And that's due to Freaknik. We're all going to be at Freaknik. Sorry, guys. But instead of being this week, the meeting will be next week. The meeting location is also moved. It's been up on the website for about a month now. Instead of meeting at the Town Center Mall, we're going to be meeting at the Panera Bread on Yamato and Federal Highway. It's big. It's easy to see. Nice, comfortable chairs. And, and free Wi-Fi, which is something we didn't have in the mall. So come on down and check us out, not this week, but next week, and then in the future we'll resume our normal third Friday of the month schedule.
I guess I should announce also DC213, which is the DEF CON group for the Los Angeles area, is having its two-year anniversary this Friday. It's at Systems Technology, Inc. in Hawthorne. I don't remember the exact address.
It's on DC213.org.
Yeah, DC213, it's like the 13,000 block of Hawthorne Boulevard in Hawthorne. Yes, I know that's out in 310 land, but 213 is a tiny area code anyway. Also, I mean, I'm considering moving it back to 213 if I can find a decent meeting space in there. But go to DC213.org, check it out if you're in the Los Angeles area and you're going to be free this Friday. Systems Tech, Inc. from like 8 p.m., onwards. So show up. We have a barbecue.
Okay. Barbecue.
Yeah.
Zygmunt, Freaknik, when and where?
Freaknik is in Nashville, Tennessee this weekend. It starts Friday at noon. The presentations begin, and the presentations end Saturday night, relatively late. I'm not exactly sure on the time. I'll be there Thursday night. A bunch of people will be getting there Thursday night. We're going to try to do a little bit of a meetup. There's only one meeting room, and there's like the area where everybody hangs out. So we'll hold up a sign or just look for us, the guys in the black shirts that have BR on them. And we're definitely going to try to at least get together and maybe go out to dinner or something similar to a bar for those of us who are old enough and things like that. But, yeah, definitely try to head up to Freaknik. It's really cheap registration. I want to say $20, but don't quote me on that.
I assume Nashville is big. Where in Nashville?
It is being held exactly at the Holiday. Actually, I don't think it's the Holiday Inn. But it's being held exactly at, and I can give you an address.
Is it on freaknik.org?
Actually, it's freaknik.info.
Okay.
And the actual hotel it's staying at, it's obviously the 21st to the 23rd. It's taking place at the Days Inn Stadium in Nashville, Tennessee. And the address of that location is... as we wait... See, this is the problem with Tor. It's a little slow.
Okay, so it's at the
Days
Inn into Google Maps or Freaknik.info.
The Days Inn Stadium/Downtown, 211 North 1st Street, Nashville, Tennessee. It's freaknik.info. Just don't mix up the .info. And, that's Freaknik. It should be pretty entertaining and exciting.
Come and meet the illustrious Dr. Zygmunt.
Yeah, and as long as we're doing announcements, just real quick, the magazine is back online. You can order the magazine. I'd be more than happy to ship it to you. It's a lot of fun. Believe me, I have my own P.O. box now. I'm very excited.
Those are fun.
Yes, but the first three issues are out, and... You know, sooner or later we're going to have that fourth one on there, but if you have missed out and you haven't gotten the first three issues and you wanted to check them out, they're $5 each. Shipping is dirt cheap. I think we charge $2.50 for shipping, and it actually costs us like $2.61, so it's all right. We love you guys, and we want you to come get the magazine. You can order it online. There's a big link right on the front page of www.binrev.com. And we'll take care of it. We'll get it shipped right out to you. They usually get shipped once a week, so you'll never wait longer than a week and two or three days to get your issue.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll have to order my copy because I never actually got one.
And as a final announcement...
Hurry up.
Yeah. BinRev Radio will be broadcasting live next week. I will have everything set up. We will be broadcasting live at... What time do we broadcast live? It's like 5 p.m.
9:30 p.m.
Eastern. Yeah. On Tuesday, whatever Tuesday next week is.
Okay.
So make sure to tune in at that point.
If this doesn't happen, it's Strom's fault because I just heard about this right now.
Yeah, well, I'm getting a new asterisk box set up. We will be live, and we will also try and take your calls. Leave us voicemail, area code 213-415-1047.
And email, as always, is radio@binrev.com. Zygmunt, quick, shouts.
Shouts go out quickly to Biz, RM Pants, everyone who submitted to Hack TV, and to my illustrious co-hosts today.
Thank you very much.
Yay.
And I'll send shouts right out back to you, and that's it.
Yep.
Strom?
Shouts to Zygmunt.
All right.
Oh, I feel the love. Nice.
Closing music tonight is Shave by Enon, epitonic.com. And as always, we will see you next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.